a period of time as well. Thank you. Okay, can we move to declarations of interest? None. Okay, thank you. And can we go to the action sheet for the audit committee? I think Gerald. Okay. Can we go through page by page for accuracy? Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, and that's it. Can we have a proposer and seconder then in relation to those actions?
Just before proposing, can we just get an update on the one action that's not been removed from the grant Saturday? It's just for our information on the new cancer fund to see where we stand on it.
It's the financial assistance policy was drafted by a consultant. I think it went through the AHC committee, and the new grants database is going to be based on the financial assistance policy. So I think they're currently going out the procurement for a grants database system based on the policy. Yeah, we've got the AHC.
Okay, thank you. Moving to item number 4, that's in relation to agreeing the dates and start times for the audit committee meetings. We have before us a list of dates and location, but we need to look at times. Thank you.
Any thoughts? Currently the times are 2 o'clock start. Are members content with that? To continue with the 2 o'clock start time? Proposed.
Yes, thank you. Okay, thank you. Item number 5 is in relation to members' training, and we're going to get a verbal update from Dorina.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Members, this is just in terms of I think those of you especially that are new to the committee, the audit committee does, it is a little bit different to other committees of council. We are offering you a number of different ways to receive some training in relation to this committee. We've, I think, contacted all new members and invited you to do a one-to-one type training with myself and Gerard, where we'll talk you through all of the workings of the committee, the different members, so we'd encourage you to take that up. Secondly, there is an external course called On Board, which is run with contributions from the Northern Ireland Audit Office, from SIPFA, and again, that runs twice yearly, usually around September time will be the next one. So if you would be interested in attending that, if you can contact Louise Dillon, she'll make those arrangements for you. We had, under the previous chair, Joe Campbell, then brought training in-house, which was very specific to local government audit committees. We had contributions from our internal and our external auditors, presentations from ourselves as officers, and again inclusion from SIPFA. That training was very well received, and we'll probably do that later in the year, members, but maybe get a number of the new members allow you just to attend one or two audit committees before we run that, just to get maximum value from that. So please do attend the training that has been offered to you, and contact myself if there's anything else you see that you think is of relevance and you wish to attend.
Yeah, just a brief comment on the training. I agree with you, Dorina. I went to the training in Clare House, and although that was very, very good up in Belfast, it was death by PowerPoint. I mean, it was, by the end of it, you know, you're falling asleep. Mm-hmm. The training in-house was excellent. And I remember even the interactive with Christine, where we were going 1, 2, 3, 4, and all of them. We got all but one right, I think, at the very end. More information was retained. And I think even for members that had done that previously, because between that training and now, there's bits to forget.
Yeah.
I think that's the one that needs to be prioritised for all the members, and I encourage everyone to go. I thought that was excellent. So in-house training, definitely, before sending a load of people out to their house to get trained.
So I think we were thinking we were probably, we've one member, you know, who's off on maternity at the minute, etc. And just to allow another couple of members, we'll probably organise that for after our September meeting. And then new members will have attended too. We'll, I suppose, know some of the workings of the committee, etc. And we'll come back to you then with that. Thank you for your contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorina. Moving on to item number 6, it's the annual report for 18-19 from the independent chair of the audit committee, being Joe Campbell. Obviously, Joe isn't with us, so Dorina's going to take us through that.
Thank you,
Thank you, Brona. Members, you have this in front of you. My understanding is that Joe will have circulated it to those members that were on the committee during the 18-19 year, so it may not be new to you. I suppose I'm going to take it that essentially you've read it. You'll see the format of it does follow the best practice guidance on annual reports for audit committees. It gives an overview of the work of the committee, the attendance of members. You will see it goes through from sections 3 onwards, all of the various contributions. So it does point out at 3.1 where you yourselves, as an audit committee, did do a review of your own effectiveness and the actions and recommendations that were coming out of those. It does then talk about the contributions that you receive from both the internal and external auditors during the year. You will see in the report we're asking today for members to both approve the contents and approve that this is reported to Council as an annual report of the Audit Committee. We did this last year, and certainly this is a recommendation of the chairperson, the outgoing chairperson, that we would present this then to the next meeting of full council to give council that assurance that the audit committee has carried out the work delegated to it. So happy to take any comments or questions. One thing I would point out to members, we have spotted there's a slight anomaly on the attendance figures at paragraph 2. We will get those corrected ahead of this report being presented to council. Just deal with those discrepancies. Happy to take any comments or questions, members.
Just for clarity, no, I put off the next, that is my discrepancy. It's just even on the attendance before we it's published to ensure that, because I know some members that were in the meeting last year at the end of the year aren't here. I'm not asking it for you to correct the spelling of my name, because with attendance 3 out of 5, I don't mind that Mr. Brain wasn't full attendance, but just if you want to check it out, because I thought I would place John Trailer.
Okay. Thank you, Dorina. I have a question myself. I was wondering if Dorina would take us through on 3.1 A to G the information that Joe has reflected there as to the actions that he was seeking from his annual report, and I wonder if Dorina could just very briefly take us through where we are with those.
Thank sure. You. Yeah, thank you. So just taking each of them in turn, it was then recommended under Principle 2 Skills that parties be asked to give consideration to appointing elected members for a term greater than 1 year where possible. This is something in the run-up to the AGM each year. Myself and Liam have met, certainly in the last 2 years, with the political parties and ask them to consider that when they are reappointing annually to committee. And I suppose we have seen some consistency where possible, spanning 1 year of council. So that has been carried out and affected where possible. In terms of the second point, Mark B under Principle B, review the committee's terms of reference in accordance with HMT guidance. We do review this committee's terms of reference annually. We look at the HM Treasury guidance, which is seen as a best practice document. We also review it alongside the CIPSA best practice guidance and try to incorporate both. The most recent review there was earlier on in the year with other terms of reference, and that went through FPNR committee and came to this committee. To bring a paper on cyber risk management to a future meeting, that's something that we're working on currently, and hopefully we'll have that to the September meeting. To bring a paper on assurance mapping, well, that's on your agenda today, members. To bring a paper on the CIPSA Code of Practice on managing the risk of fraud and corruption to a future meeting, that has been brought to your previous meeting. We are going to, myself and Gerard are running a suite of governance training which will encompass fraud risk in the autumn of this year, and that will be both staff and members will be invited to attend that as well, and that will draw on some of those the best practice points. A point F then, to ensure that internal audit reports are completed and timely reported to the audit committee. This is something which we do reinforce regularly with our CMT, our assistant directors, and Jared plays a liaison role ensuring that our officers are getting their responses back to Christine and her team on a timely basis. So that's something that we do continue to reinforce regularly and to strive to ensure that all papers are provided on a timely basis to Democratic Services. Again, we do try and get the papers out as timely as possible. There's a number of sort of crunch points a year. This is probably the audit committee where we struggle most to get you financial statements in a timely manner, and this is when you see the volume that goes into those 100 plus page document, you'll maybe understand why that one does come. It's also part of the reason that we do a presentation of today to try and take you through the key points of that document. So again, something that we will continually strive to do, because it is important that you get your papers on a timely basis. So hopefully that answers your questions.
Okay, thank you, Doreena, for that. We need a proposer and seconder. Proposed by Councillor Byrne.
And Councillor Rowan.
Thank you. The next item is in relation to the ASM 4-year internal audit plan. This is one for closed session. It's an item deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information and the public, may by resolution be excluded during this item of business. So could I have a proposal and seconder to go into closed session, please? Councillor Sharvin, thank you. Seconder, Councillor Harvey, thank you. Both Councillor Lewis and Councillor Root. Thank you. The next item on the next item on the agenda.
Whilst in closed session, it was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Sharvin, to approve the internal audit strategy and internal audit charter and the annual internal audit schedule of reviews for the 2019-20 year.
Thank you, Doreena, and apologies for that. Overkeen, I think. The next item now on the agenda is number eight, presentation of financial statements. And Doreena is going to give us a presentation. Just to say, first of all, thank you to Doreena and Ken and the finance team for completing the accounts. I know, having been there many times myself, the pressure involved in that and the time and the deadline that you're up against, it's very, very difficult. So well done to all of you. I know the accounts came out, or the financial statements came out yesterday, so members may feel they had not enough time to review, but that's why Doreena's given a presentation today and she's touched on that, and that will be very useful. Also, they'll be coming back again to us at our next meeting in September, which will be give another opportunity to ask any questions at that point. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Doreena. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just for the benefit of new members, I'm going to treat this in a presentation format. It's something that we introduced last year in the recommendation of the previous Chair, and I think it worked quite well. The full suite of accounts are in your packs, and we will take any questions on them. They are over 100 pages, and they are difficult for the best of us to understand. So what we're going to do today is highlight, I suppose, some of the key areas that you as audit committee members need to be cited on and need to have that oversight role on. We will obviously answer any questions on any of the detail. So just to take you through the format of the accounts, just to say where we are, we have a statutory duty to produce a set of accounts and to have them with the department published on our website and available for audit by the 30th of June each year. So we have fulfilled that statutory obligation, and they were with the Department for Communities by the 30th of June. They will now be subject to audit by the Northern Ireland Audit Office, and when we meet again in September, we will then the Audit Office will report back to you the results of their audit. We will then present to you any changes that we have agreed with the Audit Office between these set of figures that are in front of you today and the set that we will then be asking this Audit Committee to approve, and ultimately the Accounting Officer and the Chair of Council to sign in September. So you may see some changes between now and then. So just taking you through where these are then. The key format of the accounts, there has been a change in the last couple of years with more focus on the front narrative part of the accounts, which is called, it's about telling the story. And we have an enhanced requirement now for additional narrative reporting, and that's something that we started on that journey really last year. We got recommendations from the Northern Ireland Audit Office to enhance that further, and that's something that you've seen. We're trying to give the reader of the accounts as much information on the financial workings of this council as possible, and at the same time follow a very prescriptive format, so they are quite it is trying to make them as user-friendly as we can within the legislation. As audit committee members, then, there are key things that I just want to tell you. We have had our fixed assets revalued in the year by Land and Property Service. So what you'll see when you look at our balance sheets, all councils, as you know, are asset rich. We carry a big value with regard to land and buildings that we own. And there is a particular focus each year by the Audit Office on ensuring that that value is right. We have those independently revalued each year by Land and Property Services, and any adjustments we will make in bringing them to your attention. With the new councils came a general power of competence, where the Chief Executive got a new powers. Any use of that general power of competence has to be published in our accounts. So just to advise members that during the 18-19 year, our Chief Executive did not use his general power of competence at all. There are no changes to accounting policies this year that we need to bring to your attention. So the accounting policies and the format in which we have derived these accounts is similar to the previous year. And we've had no significant changes in our council's business, so that's no new companies or anything like that we need to incorporate into the accounts. In terms of the narrative report then, this really spans pages 3 to 16. Members, the onus for you is to ensure that what we're saying in the narrative report, it does line up with your understanding of what this council does and does reflect in the figures that are in that report, and that's something that, again, the Audit Office will review objectively when they come to do their audit. You'll see there that we link the strategic objectives of the council through. We note our corporate plan objectives, we note what we've been doing on the community plan, and all our key strategies of this council. We're then required to put our expenditure and funding analysis in there, and we also then go through the key governance and assurance frameworks of this council, of which the Audit Committee plays a key role, and we drill down then into the financial performance for the year. You'll see we have highlighted for the reader of the accounts our current and our future significant capital projects. And then we have a requirement to look forward, to highlight to anyone looking at our accounts what the future looks like as best we understand it. So what risks are we facing, what financial concerns, constraints, etc., and what does the horizon look like in the context of the finances of this council. So there's a lot of information in there, and certainly this is your opportunity, members, if there's anything that you think is not reflected reflective of the work of this council, to point that out. We are required then to produce what's called a remuneration report, and I do like to point out, councillors, there is information in relation to those of you that were here during the 18-19 year contained within this report. It does detail, as we are required to do, the allowances, the travel and subsistence, and the payment for attendance at courses, etc., in total. We're also required then to provide a link to council's website, where we then publish those allowances on an individual councillor by councillor basis. So that's a lot of information in relation to yourselves that goes into the public domain. We've circulated that table prior to loading it on the website to allow you to see that, but just to let you know, that's up there now and is live and sometimes gets some attention. This remuneration report then also gives you the information relating to the senior employees of the council, the salaries received and the benefits in kind received and their pension benefits received as well. Employees are listed and the bands accordingly are also listed. Contained within this report then are any exit packages paid to staff, and again all of these will, there are four this year, all of these will have been through SPNR committee for approval prior and are noted there, they are anonymised, and again there's lots of details on pension within there, pension details of all of our staff, and our pension liability is obviously a significant figure in the accounts. So the remuneration report is on page 29 to 35. The governance statement then is a key document contained within the accounts, and it's in there from pages 18 to 28. You'll note that again we're reporting that our governance structures are well embedded now in the council at the end of its 4th year. Again, we feel that we have got procedures around risk management and our assurance frameworks well embedded. We note that we received a satisfactory assurance from our internal auditors, and we do highlight that we had one limited assurance opinion during the year in the area of facilities management. We also note in that report what actions were taken to address those limitations. We also highlight then to the reader key areas of risk identified, and that's in relation to the prior year and going forward. And in the current year, the areas that we are identifying as key areas of risk are procurement and contract management. Members of the Audit Committee will know this has been a key area of focus for some time. We continue to note the IT transformation project. We do believe that we're still carrying risk there until we get all of our stabilisation projects completed. We note as well the economic and political climate. There's a lot outside of our control in terms of finance, and with the current position with regard to the Northern Ireland Assembly, it does pose certain financial uncertainties for us, Brexit, etc. as well. So we are noting that we've got risks there. We've got Belfast Region City deal. It's great, but comes with some risks. So again, we are highlighting that. We are highlighting our big screen investigation at the request of the Northern Ireland Audit Office, and we have also noted a risk relating to our ongoing planning backlog. So that's the items that we are drawing to the attention of the reader. We put detail into that governance statement about the steps that we're taking to address those risks. All of this will become, you know, published information. So just bringing us on then to the financials, the expenditure and funding analysis is there. Again, the format of all of this is as prescribed to us by the Department for Communities. We are required to split out this along our segments, as it's called, which we deem to be our directorates. So you will see the results there. There are a number of accounting adjustments made in relation to each of those, to include things like depreciation, etc. And then it shows a net position. What's probably most important from your own position is towards the bottom line, the actual sort of financial state of the council. You will see that we had an opening general fund balance of 11.2 million, and we are closing the year with a reduced general fund of 9.2 million. The key movements in relation to that are we have a provision in this year for some 2.6 million for rate support grant. Members of SPNR will be well versed as to why that's in there, and members of SPNR will also know that that's counteracted somewhat by 700,000 management accounting position where we were under budget. So that's at a high level why your reserves position has moved. Moving on to your balance sheet then, you'll see our fixed assets, as I referred to before, is your very sizable figure in there, sitting at now $185 million at the end of the year. Has been a significant increase on that figure, and that's driven largely by your new leisure centre coming on board and offset somewhat by depreciation. So that figure will increase as we bring new capital build into our estate. As well, other items just to bring to your attention, you'll see quite an increase in our short-term borrowing position. Last year, the year end, we had $5 million under short-term borrowing. This year, we have $15 million. And again, FPNR members will know that we did make a conscious decision to undertake some short-term borrowing to avail of low interest rates. So whilst the balance position is high, we're reaping the benefit through reduced interest charges there. I'm going to touch on provisions on a later slide. And again, you'll see on our second page of the balance sheet there your usable reserve figure. So we have some money sitting in a capital fund. We have another reserve which was to pay for our election. And then we have our general fund balance, which is really our money to spend, if you like, or sitting at $9.2 million. In terms then of the movement on reserves, you can see that movement really just driven from the 11.2 down to the 9.1. And the provisions, which I would like to bring to your attention, note 19, we do carry over almost $6 million by way of provisions. So we are required to carry amounts or ring fence amounts, if you like, for landfill closure costs. We have had those independently reviewed in the year, and as a result, we're able to reduce that provision. We carry a provision in relation to staff costs, and this is for overtime in relation to holiday pay. This is something that we've carried for some time, and at this point this does not reflect the recent ruling in relation to the PSNI case. The position in this council is we have always paid this out in relation to the Newry staff. The provision is being carried for in relation to the legacy Down staff. We are, I suppose, at this point unclear as to whether the 20-year position that's being talked about in relation to PSNI will relate to all of us. So this is something that may change between now and these accounts being signed off. We may need to increase our provision as a result of that case. And then you'll see a new line in this year for $2.6 million in relation to rate support grant. For those of you not in FPNR, this arises as a result of a judicial review taken by Mid-Ulster Council against the department, which they successfully won. And as a result, the department have come seeking $2.6 million by way of refund, if you like, for rate support grant, which they deem to have been overpaid to us over the last 3 years, something which we're challenging with the department. But and if successful, I would hope to reverse that provision between now and signing the accounts, but it's with the department for consideration. Payment of suppliers, this is something which we usually bring to this committee in terms of our prompt payment statistics. We don't have it with you today because of the timing of this particular committee. We haven't closed down a quarter just at the minute, but what you'll see is that the position for the year ended up being that 90% of invoices were paid within 30 calendar days, which is essentially bang on target. And a 10% paid within the 10 days. So as the committee will be aware, we we're not meeting the recommended target in the 10-day prompt payment. With regard to contingencies, I need to bring to members' attention, we are noting two contingencies, one in relation to ARC 21 and the residual waste treatment project. This has been in place for a number of years. And then the second one is a new one. There's been a judgment in relation to McLeod Sargent, We were advised by our actuary to include this as a contingent liability note. I've just been, we're speaking to the audit office there this afternoon, and we may need to actually book a hard provision for this. So that's something that we'll work with the auditors on, and again, something that might change now between the time you see these next set of accounts, the final set of accounts in September. So that's, I suppose, the highlights of the accounts. Before I take questions, just to let you know the process then, the accounts are with the department and with the audit office. The auditors are commenced, they've been in to do an interim review already. We'll commence our year-end review on Monday. Important to note that the accounts are available now for public scrutiny within a particular window, 31st of July to the 28th of August. The audit office hope to be in a position to complete their audit by mid-September, and then we will table them together with any audit findings in front of you at our meeting on the 23rd of September. At that meeting, we will be asking you as an audit committee to recommend to council that they are signed, and you will be informed by the work of the audit office at that point. Happy to take any comments or questions.
Thank you, Dorina. Over to members, any questions? Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, my question's on the reserves, and I think when it comes to the rates process, we always bring this up, and it's sort of, you know, there's a figure sort of thrown out there, maybe unwarranted, but, you know, retaining 10% running costs and reserves. What is the line that council, we must have some sort of a line that we're trying to keep. You know, the reserves increased over the last couple of years, and I understand with the rate support grant now, it's 2.6 billion or whatever. That's something that needs to be addressed in the future, should we not, you know, win our argument on that we're going to have to find it somewhere else. Not going to continue to come in the reserves or whatever. And I understand that there are unknowns that you need to plan for. But as elected reps, I suppose it's planning for those unknowns to an extent that's greater than what we see, you know. We're increasing the rate when it comes to the end of the year, and are we doing it fairly by keeping high levels of reserves? And I know I'm saying this when the reserves went from 12 down to 9, and I understand why there's money being moved. But I would like to get some sort of a definitive direction. Never mind, you know, an answer. I don't want a figure, I don't want a line. I just want to know as members what we want to try and hold. And if it is in excess of 10%, if we're talking about 15-16%, and that's the chief executive's desire, well then fair enough, at least we know what we're dealing with going into the rates. But it is one of the big things that frustrates me coming into the rate process. And just as I said in the pre-meeting, your wee test of multiplying the figures by 10 didn't go amiss, so I think a few of us passed your test.
Thank you. There is no magic percentage anymore. I think previously there was a sort of a rule of thumb. Certainly the prudential code, which is what we work towards, says to us reserves which are adequate to meet your medium term financial commitments. Now, as officers and advising Liam as accounting officer, what we have always interpreted that to mean is 3 months working capital. And the reason we take 3 months is because most of our contracts of employment are within that period. So we see ourselves having a duty to pay our staff if you know for that period if we were ever in a financially difficult position. We also then have certain elements within that we ring fence and all have agreed to ring fence as a council. So you'll recall in the rates process last year where we thought we were losing rate support grants, and indeed we have now been advised that we are. So we will, £800,000 of that will be down. We fund any RPA related capital redundancy costs out of reserves, and that goes into that as well. So I think last year during the rates process, I brought a schedule to members of this is how I see, you know, the reserves and what they are to be used for. I will do that again this year. The local government auditor in previous years had said in her report that councils needed to build up an adequate level of reserves, and maybe slightly misquoting there. And I know now this year when the most recent report, which is in your packs, has come out, There has been significant movement in our reserves and in other council reserves, and I know the local government auditor is now reporting that recommending that councils must know what they're holding those levels of reserves for. And I suppose my reading of that is there's an indirect, don't be holding it too much and don't be holding it just for a rainy day. I suppose there's always that element of a bit of the rainy day, because as we have seen, we have been hit this year. We may be further hit with holiday pay, and we may be further hit with it with this McLeod judgment. But that's not enough to hold an unreasonable amount as well, and to keep on building it at the expense of the ratepayer. So I suppose our general rule of thumb is a 3-month working capital position, which is quite significant in this council. And I will then, during the rates process, bring that schedule to members again, which actually puts some hard figures against that for you. I don't have it for you today, but I will do that during the rates process.
Thank you, Dorina. Councillor Sharvin.
Yeah, just a couple of questions for you. I did hit that on reserve as well, but obviously, as SPNR member, I know about the borrowing, but moving forward, is there a view that we continue with the short-term borrowing against long-term borrowing? Because obviously short-term borrowing and creditors have doubled in comparison to long-term borrowing going down by 4.7 million. Is there a view of the council going forward that we continue with the view of short-term borrowing? Second question is around revenue, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but on page 39 it states the gross income for ERT, which I assume includes planning fees, given that they have moved under that remit, but if you compare it to page 63, which is just external customers, the figures are different by a significant number. Is there internal customers that we expect revenue from that would cross over? So on page 39, ERT gross income, obviously it's 5.153845, but on page 63, the gross income, revenue from external customers for ERT is 3973593. Have I missed another page somewhere that tells me where the other gross income comes from?
Okay, well, Ken's having a look at that. I'll answer your first question for you with regard to short-term borrowing. There's no decision really at this point, and obviously when we come to set the rates each year, we get a mandate from yourselves with regard to our borrowing. We are advised by our Treasury advisors, and certainly the move towards this approach currently is because that short-term borrowing rate, we're getting better value for money, really. It'll very much be dependent on how markets move, and I suppose one of the beauties of us being in a short-term borrowing position is that we're not locking ourselves into anything long-term at the minute. If the markets do change and Brexit, potentially is very likely that the markets will be impacted, we tie in very closely to our Treasury advisors, so as soon as they say things are starting to shift, and long-term borrowing is more value for money, then we will shift our focus accordingly. But at the minute, we're being driven to take advantage of those low interest rates, and we're borrowing from other councils using money markets, etc., on their advice and with all of the they do all of the risk, the credit risk work for us as well. So. I suppose if there's any sort of long-term strategy, it's really just to maximise the best value.
Okay.
But how we do that, we'll continue to work with them as markets move, they'll move.
I know, Dorina, previously we've worked with the Treasury to find efficiencies, and we did that, and it did reap reward. Are we planning to do a similar exercise? I know you're saying continually worked with him, but we did a sort of big exercise which seemed to bring down the value of interest and payments that we're paying out. Are we planning to have a similar event on an annual basis, which, you know, could be one big hit rather than a continual small pieces?
We meet with them twice a year. We do a big drill down. I think probably it came to your attention at one point because it was one big hit. But no, we meet with them. We spend a day with them every 6 months. And then Brenda Phillips, who you'll know, Brenda has that Treasury Officer role internally. Brenda would be in very regular contact with them, but Ken, Brenda and myself meet with them twice a year. Usually spend about a day with them doing a big deep drill down, and all of the, we also then ahead of asking you to strike the rate, we run everything that we are bringing in front of you through them as well. So nothing on the horizon that's going to be drastic at this point.
Up to 2.6 million anywhere,
no magic rabbit to pull out of hats in terms of the rates process at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, do you want to pick on that one?
Ken's going to correct me now, so I've missed something somewhere.
We actually have to make a decision in the next 2 weeks because we're going to have to repay the 11 million that is on short term. And we have to make that decision as to whether we continue with our short-term borrowing or take it out on a longer basis over the life of the asset. And we will be taking specific guidance from Arling Close on whether or not this is the right time to continue with the short-term borrowing process.
Okay.
On the other question, I am slightly struggling and will have to do a reconciliation between the two numbers, but I suspect it is something to do with the enhancements and the depreciation of the assets during the year, and that may have had an effect on the income of that particular department.
Okay, no, that's fine. If you just come back, just so I understand where the variance is there and my figures are different. Thank you, Ken.
I'd like to say thank you to Dorina for a very comprehensive and informative presentation, which was really helpful in giving us a review of where we are in relation to financial statements. The only question I have in relation to them at this juncture is in relation to the annual governance statement and the significant issues in 2018-19. My query is in relation to the absenteeism issue that we already discussed and the fact that it's raised by local government auditor in their report and the fact that it's now on the risk register and whether or not that should be included in the significant governance issues for 18-19 within the report that stands before us today.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I would be content enough to include that because, as I say, you know, we've spoken about it quite recently as a senior management team, made the decision to highlight it specifically on our risk register. So, I would be content enough. If members are content, we will include a short paragraph on that and bring that into the public domain. As Brona says, it is highlighted in the local government auditor's report that we are unfortunately in this case top of the league table, so to speak, with regard to sickness absence. So happy enough to include that.
Thank you. With that in mind, are members content to note the report? Okay, thank you. Next item is item number 9, the assurance mapping and code of governance, and pass to Gerard to take us through that report.
Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of the assurance framework is to ensure that the council complies with the statutory requirements and members and senior officers of the council can have effective ongoing oversight of the council's governance and assurance arrangements. So as Rena highlighted in our presentation, the governance arrangements are already well embedded within the organisation. An assurance framework is just a way of evidencing this and sort of illustrating it within a document. So each year, annually, that we brought back to the audit committee for review, see if there are any changes to our governance arrangements. So the reason we completed the assurance mapping document was the previous chairman had completed a self-assessment exercise on the effectiveness of the audit committee, and Joe brought back a report to the January 2019 committee, and one of the recommendations was to bring back a paper on assurance maps, on assurance mapping. So Appendix 1 includes the Council's assurance framework, and it shows the different sources of assurance and related key elements, control measures combined to enable the Council to monitor its governance arrangements and produce the evidence to support its annual governance statement, which Serena has just presented. Also included within the assurance framework is the Council's Code of Governance. So this was taken from the SIP sort of slash solace document, which was delivering good governance in local government. So this represents best practice for developing and maintaining a local code of governance and applies to the annual governance statement also. So we can just bring it to the document. The first page is just a diagram, and this basically illustrates the Council's whole governance arrangements. So how control mechanisms filter into the annual governance statement and how these are linked to both the SPNR committee, audit committee and ultimately Council. And then highlights that everything the Council do should be documented like policies, procedures and processes. And then the new element, the Code of Governance, is really how the Council manages its affairs. So if anyone has any questions.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. Members happy to note that report. Okay, thank you. The next item on the agenda is the Corporate Risk Register, and I'll pass to Serena to take us through that.
Thank you, Chair. Members, you'll be familiar with the format and layout of the Risk Register. For the benefit of new members, this is a live document, and it's something which we review quarterly as a senior management team, and then we bring to the Audit Committee for your input and discussion. Underneath the Corporate Risk Register then is a series of risk registers. There's one held for each directorate, and then there'll be project-specific risk registers as well. All of that is considered when we're looking at the Corporate Risk Register. So, as I say, it is a live document. It is meant to change and adapt, and we do look at the risks afresh every time. So I will. You'll see that in each of the risks that we identify, we also then identify actions to address those risks. A target date and comments are provided as to where the actions are in relation to the target date. Once actions are completed, then that triggers a very detailed review of that risk. So in terms of the high-level position for yourselves, we have two significant changes to the risk register which we're presenting. As Brona has alluded to earlier, we have added a new risk in relation to sickness absence, and this has been informed by our sickness absence statistics. It has been informed by the Local Government Auditor's report, which recently noted that we, Newry Morning Down, do carry the highest level of sickness absence in the local government arena. So we are highlighting this as a new risk. In relation then to Risk 10, it's not a new risk as such, but rather it's a change in focus of the existing risk. Existing Risk 10, as previously stood, was around the risk of industrial relations deteriorating as we went through a period of change. For members that were previously on the committee, you will be aware that it was maybe this time last year this risk arose because we were in a very difficult position with our trade unions, and we had a very real risk of strike action at that point. We did at that stage then identify a number of actions to be taken to mitigate that risk. Those actions are progressing, and one of the key actions was to form a working group. First of all, sorry, to bring in the Labour Relations Agency, and that piece of work then concluded with them, so that action was fulfilled. And then to establish a working group to really then address the key points that at that stage were leading to the industrial unrest, if you like. So that working group is now established and has had 2 meetings. And so when we came to look at that risk as it existed, we determined as a senior management team that like the risk has not gone away, we really needed to, in our view, refocus it in order to have the action to really address what the risk is. So this Corporate Risk 10 has been refocused, if you like, and really now we're focusing on trying to work with the trade unions through this established working group and through our other forums to focus on the harmonisation of the terms and conditions across the whole organisation and the absence management procedures that had really heightened things when the risk originally arose. So there are a number of other minor changes. I'll take those as read. I would point out to you that there's been a few sort of anomalies in some of the little colour charts within the individual risks. At the back of your risk register, we sort of produce a one-pager which lets you see where the residual risk score is and any movement from last time. That's accurate, so it's a good rule of thumb in terms of where we think the risk is presently. So happy to take any comments or questions, members.
Thank you. Dwina, Councillor Sharvin.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of questions. So first one is the risk CRO2, so obviously the breach of legislation. And it's just a comment more than anything. The first action plan obviously is around contract management, and the comment is HR to target Ralph and staff. To me, it would be line management would identify Ralph and staff that would be put forward for the training, not that HR will know every single person in the organisation that should do the training. That may be just me being particular, but I would reword it to Ralph and staff being identified and training scheduled to be devised, rather than HR do that themselves. Just on an extension of Farina's comments about the risk 10, and I did mention this in the pre-meeting. To me, a risk removed is the wrong terminology being brought to the audit committee from management. It should be the user proposing that a risk be removed, and it be up to the audit to say that that risk should be removed. To me, it's my understanding is, you know, is that the opinion of all stakeholders? It's the opinion of the management, but do trade unions also agree that the risk has been dealt with? I accept this is a corporate risk and trade unions is a separate entity, but they are still stakeholder. It's probably not the right forum to ask, it's probably FCNR, but, you know, when was the last meeting held with trade unions? And from the discussions that parties had with trade unions, my understanding was that elected representatives would be invited to the workshop as an observer and be part of that building the bridge so that things would improve and T's and C's can be signed off, because it is an ongoing issue that we do seem to be having. So I would suggest that we would, going forward, have proposed risk removed. I'm being particularly again around process, but would we call it a CR10? Would it not be CR and the next number rather than replacing the one that you're removing? So it would be CR13, because it would be a new risk that's coming onto the risk register and the previous CR10 has been closed out. And is that not the way that should happen?
Okay, I'll take each of those in turn. In terms of, I suppose, the way we view this was it wasn't a risk that has been eradicated and a new risk. This was just a refocusing of an existing risk so that we could properly address the risk and accordingly focus the actions. So there's probably a little bit of incorrect wording in our cover paper, but actually this, we still think we weren't saying let's eradicate that risk at all. We didn't say that it's gone. We're just refocusing it and refocusing the actions. So that's why CR10 remains, if you like.
Okay.
With regard to the trade unions and the meetings, the working group that was established to look specifically at the terms and conditions, that last met on Monday of this week. I sit on that working group, as does Roland Moore, as do other officers as well. But so that last met on Monday. There's a meeting of the LCNF, which again is our senior management team meeting with all of the trade unions and their full-time officials, happening next week as well. So things are back up and running. To my understanding, there was never any decision taken that elected members would come to any of those meetings in any capacity at all. I do recall it was something that the trade unions were meeting with members at a point, but certainly nothing ever came through any committee or any agreement that I'm certainly aware of.
Okay. Just a follow-up. So obviously it's good to hear the working group met on Monday of this week, and the LCNF is next week. And by the wording that you used, Rena, it's good to have things back up and running. Seems that it hadn't been running before, and that it hadn't been meeting regularly as what it should have been, possibly. And in response to about elected reps being involved from an observer position, I take it there's nothing to stop us taking that up if the trade union. My understanding from our meeting with the trade unions was that's what would happen. But obviously, is that something that the council would bring to council and request that we would be involved, or can we not do that?
So just a couple of points there. I think it's well known that things weren't meeting for a while, so not hiding away from that. We then brought in the LRA and had a series of facilitated meetings with the LRA. When I say up and running, we're now back to a stage where we're handling those meetings ourselves, and there does seem to be a willingness on both sides to actually progress work, would be my reading of the situation. I don't think it's one for this forum to discuss whether elected members should come to those meetings, but I do think it's something that we can pick up. We had talked before that there's a significant conflict of interest. Certainly, considerations for an elected member to be part of a working group and negotiate a working group when then a decision will be coming to council and you as an elected member may have then conflicted yourself from being able to vote on that decision.
Yep.
So probably not one that we would resolve today, yep. But certainly my understanding is there is no agreement that would be the case. My understanding is as officers we've been given the mandate to go away and do that work, and then at an appropriate point we'll bring that into you for a decision. Other for elected members to be part of those negotiations would then conflict the member from making a decision on them. But
obviously they could declare an interest and excuse themselves from the vote.
Well, not all 41, because then
not all 41 would be involved, obviously. Not every 41 would be involved in the working group. But yes, as you say, it's maybe not the right forum for that discussion, but we can take that outside of this room now.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne.
Sorry, Chair. I'm just over where I was. I was sort of dreaming when Garrett was talking there. Dreaming of figures. I suppose going from the gross risk to the inherent or the residual risk is as councillors, where we want to see it moving and we want to look at the objectives and what is put in place in order to get from one place to the other. Now, we can sit and argue, you know, dancing ahead of a pin about why we're in, you know, one box from the on the matrix here, and we could say give arguments that we should be higher or lower. But CMC or O5, failure to provide timely planning decisions, this really, really worries me. And it worries me to an extent that I do think it is the maximum of 25, because, you know, you're looking at it, like, at what point do we talk about, you know, failure to meet standards, which is in the matrix here? At what point does that become gross failure? Because in my opinion, and it is only my opinion, I think we're at that point already. At what point does adverse publicity become severe loss of confidence? Because from what we're hearing as councillors, it is a severe loss of confidence. And as I said, that's the argument you can make to move it from one place to the other. I'm not interested in moving the gross score. I'm interested in trying to get to the residual. And if you're talking about what we've put in place here, the backlog cases, and we can say that we inherited a number of cases, a huge backlog. We did get that down. I think it was like 40-odd%. We got it down to around 800. It has subsequently, from that, went back up under our own systems. We also talk about changing personnel right across the 3 years that I've been in council. Stop me if it needs to go into, if I'm going across a brief or something, because I don't know, I don't want to be saying something I shouldn't be saying in this forum. But then we're going across, we've a change of personnel. We've moved planning to a different directorate, so it's a change again that everyone has to get accustomed to. We've changed in systems. We're talking about IT infrastructure changing, which will be implemented then in a couple of years down the line. There's going to be teething issues with that. So I think, you know, at the minute, the public conference is utterly eroded in planning. And when we look at the action plans here, I can't look at these with confidence and say that we will ever get to the residual score, which is, you know, one move to the left. And that really does worry me, because it follows on to one of the other risks. Just me, my pad's going a wee bit slow here. It follows on to one of the other risks, which worries me as well. We've got the gross and the residual risk rate in the same area. We're in the red on CRO9, and I understand that's got to do with Brexit, and we can all say, what more can we do? And as councillors, when people are saying certain things to us, you know, we set up the Brexit forum, but have we done enough work on it? Well, how can you do enough work on it? I know, Jonathan, it was frustrating that some of the meetings that we went to, because it's all hypothetical, and we could all sit there and we could talk, you know, politics of what if, and that's not going to get us anywhere. But I would think that the city deal would actually be positive in this, and it's nearly sort of listed as if it's not. So looking at that as councillors on the audit committee, it wouldn't be satisfactory to us to say, listen, for now we can't envisage moving out of the red area on this. And I sort of think that even the reduction in rates income, that is linked to that previous risk I was talking about in planning. Because if you've got low public confidence, you know, where you've even businesses setting up here or new bills or whatever, that has a direct effect on the rates income. So just on the actions, I suppose that's the one thing that we'd be looking at, getting from one place to the other, and are the actions adequate enough that, yes, even if we move at a snail's pace, that we can confidently say to the public that we're trying our best to deal with it, and we're trying to reduce the risk on this, and not just looking at this risk register when it comes up every month and being happy that there is actions on it, but that the actions are sufficient enough to move us from one place to the other.
If I could just comment then, I think, Councillor Byrne, your comments with regard to the risk five probably wouldn't disagree with those. There is an element of judgment. We discuss these, as I said to you earlier, quarterly as a senior management team, and we will be then, in relation to that one, informed by the ERT underlying directorate risk register. That said, in putting together our year-end governance statement, we did take the decision to highlight our planning backlog as a significant risk. So if you're content, I think what we'll do, this is always an ever, you know, live and moving document. So we'll take your comments back to a senior management team and to Marie as director of that area to consider going forward. I take your point when you look at the definitions of the consequence 4 versus 5. You can argue we certainly are highlighting that we're definitely at that top end of 4. So we will consider that further if you're content to do so. I think your comments are sound. In terms, if you want to pick up on the Brexit one, go ahead.
Again, Chairman, the issue in terms of economic development is, again, it's probably the economic development. So CRO 9 isn't purely Brexit, but Brexit is an issue. I suppose what we're taking is a strategic approach to actually tackling some of the big macroeconomic issues that are faced with us, namely Brexit. So Brexit wears two hats in terms of risk for us. It's a risk in terms of economic development. So a lot of the work that we're doing in terms, first of all, is working with business, supporting business with InvestNI and with the Chamber of Commerce. And again, probably from a political lobbying point of view, is actually feeding through the stuff. So the stuff we've done with the cross-border councils, we'll be bringing a paper through. We're currently meeting with the councils across the board. I met with them on Friday.
we're looking to update a paper which then we intend to get into the T-shirts office about the issues of the impact of Brexit, particularly in the border area, to ratchet up the issue, because I suppose we've been in a bit of a hiatus from the 29th of March till we know what comes out of the election of the new Prime Minister, our new Tory leader, which in turn will be the Prime Minister. So what we're doing is doing a level of preparation. We're updating our information on our Brexit Borders report, which again is looking at the economic issues in terms of that considered. And secondly, then there is the internal issues in terms of Brexit. We have a risk plan developed up for ourselves in terms of the impact Brexit may have on our business. So again, we've a bid in for about $500,000, I think, doing it into DERA to look for further environmental health officers, which will then be able to clear some of the fish and egg and food products, you know, leaving the district. We're doing work, we've done work in terms of our own fleet, which crossed the border in terms of green cards. So a lot of that there has been done and been ticked off internally. So we're doing that. The city deal and the FFN is, again, the city deal is actually, it's a risk, but also it's a major opportunity for Dragon to invest in the area. So if Brexit creates a major problem, at least we have a vehicle whereby we can improve the level of digital connectivity. FFN is bringing millions of pounds of fibre investment into the district. We're doing work in terms of our new strategic projects to enhance tourism and improve tourism, looking at the development of 5G within the district, again, to make us competitive. So what we're trying to do is to build a suite of economic initiatives which will strategically place us, will be a counterbalance to any down. But again, who knows? I think the issue is we still don't know where we're going to be and what the real impact is in terms of Brexit. But all we can do is do a level of preparation to do that and use our influence both from a UK perspective and also from an ROI perspective to ensure that they know the issues that we faced in the area and the need for additional investment to protect us and mitigate against the impact of Brexit.
Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks very much, Eamon, Rena. And I suppose I'm not being critical of it. I'm just sort of pointing out that when we read it as councillors on the audit committee, that we have to be satisfied and asking officers and directors that all the actions that are in front of us are enough to get us from one place to the other, are enough to reduce the risk. And in this case, we can't reduce the risk, and I fully accept that, because we could be just talking hypothetically. But as audit members can say, is that are we doing everything that we possibly can in the current situation in order to either hold back this risk in increasing, keeping it at the level of that, or are we reducing it? And then also just on the other point of the planning, and again, I want to make it clear, it is not critical. It's not me being critical of the staff or of the matrix that's here. It's me as a member of the audit committee saying, do I think that these actions will move us into this orange area, or does it lower the risk? And I have to say, looking at it, I don't think so. I don't think so because of the constant changes. I don't think so now when you couple that with a new IT system that's coming in, and I don't think so with the way the public confidence is at the minute. And I think it's something that we need to focus on very, very heavily. And whether that takes, some political parties, even ourselves, to look at changes in these, we need to identify that this risk is severe and that the actions here, although they're highlighted as in they will take the severity of the risk down, I don't believe they will, and we need to go further. And that's what the Commons is meant to be highlighting and not critical.
Thank you, members, and Liam and Dreena, for those very helpful comments and discussion. I'd just like to check with members in relation to Councillor Sharvin's query of CR10, if you're content, members, to change that as proposed by the officers and the refocus, as Dreena has explained, how it refocuses the risk that was there. If members are content, before we note the report. We are. Okay, thank you, members. We'll note that report then. Thank you. The next item is item number 11, the fraud and whistleblowing update, and I'll pass to Gerard to take us through that. Thank you, Gerard.
Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of this report is to notify audit committee members of any suspected fraud and whistleblowing cases since the last committee until the 28th of June, and also any developments on any of the ongoing fraud and whistleblowing cases since the last committee until now. So for the first time since I've been here, we've been no new cases since the last audit committee. And if you go to Appendix 1, one of the ongoing cases is now closed and the allegation could not be substantiated. And in relation to the other case, further information is required, so it's still remaining on the register. Just to bring you back then to the National Fraud Initiative exercise for new members, the council is currently undergoing the 2018-19 exercise. So every 2 years the council partakes in this exercise facilitated by Treasury. The matches report has now been released, and in total the council has 758 matches, with 19 of these being high priority. So all high priority matches will be reviewed, plus matches which have a risk score of greater than 75% or above. So this is in line with best practice and also with what other councils are sampling. So the work is currently ongoing, and I'm working with payroll, accounts payable and procurement teams to complete the matches investigation work. And the results of the matches investigation work will be brought back to the September committee, and the Northern Ireland audit office will also be notified.
Any questions, members? No. Thank you, Gerard. Can we agree to note that report? Okay, thank you. The next item is the update on the direct award contract. And again, I'll pass to Gerard to take us through that. Thank you.
Okay, so this is a standing agenda item again. And so direct award contracts for single tender actions are basically contracts that are awarded to suppliers without a competition. So these are allowed. Council try to minimise these as best as possible, because if we're awarding contracts with competition, we have more assurance that we're getting value for money. However, as a best practice point, we bring all DSEs with a value over £5,000 to the audit committee. So in the first quarter of the 2019-20 financial year, the council awarded 16 contracts by way of a direct award with a value of £244,610. And Appendix 1 then highlights all 16 contracts, so if anyone has any questions on any of the contracts, so kind of this.
Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, I just have one question on the issues raised on number 14. You know, is it anything that we go into here in this committee, and the procurement had to be pulled?
Councillors, we'd have to go into a closed session just to give you more detail on that one. Otherwise, I can talk to you outside of the committee.
I'm happy to talk outside the committee.
Okay. Okay, if members are happy, we can note the report. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the update in relation to audit recommendations, and I'll pass to Gerard again to take us through this report.
Again, another standing agenda item. So, basically, the purpose of this report is to follow up on recommendations from both internal and external audit, going back to legacy recommendations. So from 2015-16 internal audit recommendations, all have now been fully implemented, bar 3, which related to an off-street car parking internal audit report. So these recommendations can't be implemented until the agency agreement with Transport NI ceases in October 2022. The next table then follows up on 2016-17 audit recommendations. So you can see in April 18 what the position was and what it is now. Sorry, that's actually read July 2019. But if I actually go to the appendix, there's a number of different reports which make up them. So the first one is cash handling, as Councillor Sorgan was mentioning earlier. So training for all staff involved with cash handling has just concluded last week. So all outstations should all have a new cash handling policy. I couldn't change any of these recommendations to partially or to implement it until I verify that the procedures are in place for a month or two, so hopefully going to the September committee, these will have changed to fully implement it. In relation to building control, there's two outstanding. One is in relation to is dependent on the IT strategy, and the other is dependent on the admin review, so that's why they're outstanding. You can see from the fleet management report, I've changed these all to not applicable, as they are now superseded by a statutory audit. This was carried out by the Transport Regulatory Unit, I think it's called. So ASM followed up on them recommendations as part of their work last year, and a detailed follow-up will be brought to the September committee again in relation to fleet management, but these have basically been overridden by the TRU audit now. Trade waste management, again, there's recommendations outstanding, and some of these relation to admin, some of the admin review, some in relation to IT, and really, they just have to be progressed, but there has been no progress to date. And then the last page in the appendix is basically the Northern Ireland Audit Office recommendations. So there's, from the last 2 years, 2016-17 and 2017-18, the two recommendations which have not been moved or fully implemented in relation to procurement. So there's been a lot of work which is undergone in procurement, but the recommendation is quite wide-reaching, and the only part we haven't fully implemented yet is the contracts register. And there's actually a piece of work ongoing now, and two members of staff are now being brought in full-time to work on the contract register, but we can't sign that off as fully implemented because the contract register is still outstanding. And in relation to fixed assets, again, a lot of work has been put into fixed assets. There's been a new system brought in, but the recommendations are quite wide-ranging, so all points have not been ticked off yet, so that's why it's only partially implemented. So if anyone has any questions. I'm sorry, I just wanted to say the report that Christine brought to the April committee in relation to the 17-18 recommendations, a full follow-up of them recommendations will be brought to the September committee also, including the transport regulation units audit. Thank you.
Thank you, George, for that. If there's no questions, then I have just a point to make. I think being new to the role, and I'm sure the other new members will join me in the same thing, reading these, it's like they're very detailed and comprehensive and at times a little hard to follow. I don't know how you do it, George. But in relation to getting a grip on what actually is outstanding and what the impact of having those outstanding is for the organisation and the risk involved in leaving them outstanding, or I appreciate there's a lot of work going on in the background, there's a lot of issues that have to be resolved before certain things can be closed off. And I know that's how this works, but there are quite still a number outstanding from 2016-17 and 17-18, as it so happens. My proposal to the officers was to find another way to bring information, including what we get, bringing information to us as an audit committee that will highlight where there are ongoing risks that we really need to focus on, what actions have been taken in relation to those specific outstanding recommendations, because we all know there are different priorities assigned. Sometimes some look very important but might not be, etc. And it's just to get an overview of the impact and the risk involved. And I've asked officers to take a look at that and bring it back in a report to the next audit committee meeting for members to have a look at, if members are happy with that as an approach. Okay, thank you. We'll just note that report, members, if everybody's happy. Thank you. The next item then on the agenda is item number 14, Performance Improvement Plan. That's Jonathan. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, under the Local Government Act 2014, and it sets out the duty of general duty of improvement for local government, and it's obviously the duty of the local authority to detail how they plan to plan for continuous improvement. Chair, and based on your business plan and process that has gone through year on year, Chairman, what is presented today is the performance improvement plan for the 19-20 year. Chairman, that has been out for consultation and incorporates the feedback which was tabled at the last meeting of the SPNR committee, Chairman. So the report's there for your information and for noting, Chairman, and any queries that you may have on it. It's a very comprehensive report that details how we plan to tackle improvement across the organisation in the year ahead, Chairman.
Thank you, Jonathan. Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, just one thing just to say with Jonathan's presenting the report, because I've spoken of it on SPNR, and as you rightly said there, it's out for consultation, but still out for consultation. And I think just the comments that went through on SPNR, and I spoke to a number of officers afterwards on the objectives and the change of the objective, and I think it was clarified that we're still out for consultation, so with members, we can just feed into the consultation rather than trying to make changes now. So I just want to make that clear from the SPNR, and that's why it wasn't raised to full council, but that we'd be feeding into the consultation on that rather than proposing changes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, members? No? Can we agree to note that report then? Thank you. Thanks, Jonathan. The next item on the agenda is the NIAO proposals for improvement progress report. Again, Jonathan, if you would take us through that.
Linked to the last report, really, this is following up on the recommendations that come in the audit report each year, Chairman, and really what we have detailed here are the recommendations for the year just ended, 18-19, and how we have addressed those issues, Chairman, in the attached report. Again, the details are for members to consider and note, Chairman.
Thank you, Jonathan. Members, any questions? Okay, members happy to agree to note that report? Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the Local Government Audit Report, and if we could ask Thomas from the Northern Ireland Audit Office to take this. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, thank you. This report is the report that the local government auditor does every year in the whole of the local government sector, summarising the results of the work from the audit in the last year, and this is for the year. This will summarise the results of the audit work done in 2018-19. Basically, I'm not going to go through it all, but I was just going to highlight a few points coming out of it. If you go on paragraph or figure 3, I'm not sure the page number, that's it is in your book, but in figure 3 above paragraph 1.10, it shows the council's level of overall expenditure, our council's in general overall expenditure, and then in figure 4 on the next page, it details the spend on delivering services across the region, and you can see there. Miriam Moore in there, third from the bottom of the table in spend per person. And it's just interesting to compare those as they are. And then moving ahead, then just a couple of pages, we're getting into staff costs and staffing levels, and staff costs as a percentage of total costs. And figure 6 sort of details that, shows where Miriam Moore is in relation to. We're sort of roughly in line with the average in relation to staff costs, but it is one of the councils who uses a little more of the agency staff, which is something that the local government auditor wanted to bring out, that the extent of the agency staff, but by no means the worst in respect of that. Then, moving on, I wanted to just move forward a few pages to figure 11. Figure 11, which is showing the total usable reserves of the council, and you can see there over the last number of years across all the councils, the total usable reserves, as we touched on earlier, has been rising consistently over a number of years. And in figure 12, it breaks that down among the different councils. As you can see there, that Muirion Moore and Down is third on the list, of probably about 16% of operating expenditure in general fund balances. But that was something that, as I said, we touched on earlier. Then I wanted to move forward a number of pages into part 2 of the document, and paragraph 2.28. where we highlight the issue of the big screen. And that's been an issue we've talked about for a while. And it's just given the story there of what happened in relation to the big screen. And just in summary, obviously we were contacted by a whistleblower in 2016 about the big screen. The council was getting £23,000 towards the purchase of the screen at that time. But planning, permanent planning was unsuccessful, and the screen had to be removed in 2017. There was a full internal audit review done and report done, and really we just had bringing out the results of that report at that time. In that proper processes weren't followed, the relationships with the other bodies, such as DSD at that time, wasn't properly established, conflicts of interest not being properly managed, absence of competitive procurement, additional costs being incurred but not being clearly identified and reported as costs related to the big screen. So there's a number of issues for the council, which the council has taken forward, but the local government auditor just wanted to bring this out publicly in this report. And then I was just going to move on to the last point I was going to make is in part 4, figure 14, it's around paragraph 4.8 in the report, and that's setting out the council sickness absence rates, which again is something we've touched on today, and it's one that Miriam Moore are at the top of the table this year, and were pretty close to the top of the table last year, and in general the level of absence rates right across councils is pretty high, and will certainly be higher than it would be in the mainstream public sector. and that is an area that the local government auditor has indicated now she wants to do a more detailed report, a specific report into the level of sickness absence, and to see if there are any lessons that can be learned into how to implement best practice within the councils in general. So that will be something that will be worked on in the next 12 months and reported on. So there's a lot in this report. There's a lot of interesting information, a lot of interesting comparisons between the different councils. I wasn't supposed to get into all of the detail of it, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Tomás. Members, any questions for Tomás? Councillor Sharvin?
I thought I had.
off. Sorry. I don't know if I'll ever get away from this big screen fiasco, but it's good that it's been acknowledged that we have addressed it and learned from it. Seeing that the new reporter continuously states that it was me that highlighted it from internalness of Tinkle. So it's great to see a positive report rather than a negative. Just a couple of things, it's more a general opinion from yourself. So one comment I'd make is about employee numbers in councils. It's nearly at the highest rate of before the councils became the super councils. It seems a continuing trend that we're moving that way. Is that the common view across all councils, that they are seeing that the workforce is continuously increasing and really the benefits of RPA isn't being realised? And then the second question I have is the figure 9 that you have there is outstanding loan balances as a percentage of revenue income, and our own councils is fourth highest and quite above the average from the Northern Ireland Audit Office. Is there an opinion that the councils that are above the average should make a plan to be at least near the average figure, nearly 100%, which we as a council are? That's the only two questions I have.
Tomás?
Yep, okay. In relation to staff numbers, staff numbers have gone up, and I'm not sure the benefits of RPA have been realised, and that is something that is in our plans to look at in the next year or two. And you know, obviously there were very optimistic plans made when RPA was first brought up, but I don't think obviously staff savings haven't been anything like what was proposed, and you see there the staff numbers are the same as ever. I can't actually comment on what the councils, I'm not sure what ways the councils see that going, but I'm not aware of any big plans that they're changing significantly in the near future. Your second question was, I think, about outstanding loan balances and the loan balances. Not, I don't think we would have a recommendation as such. It will depend on the individual councils and how much they can sustain. But yes, you wouldn't want to see it going much more than the 100% level, because obviously it becomes more difficult to sustain, manage.
Okay. Thank you, Tomás. Could I bring in the Chief Executive just in relation to one of those questions, please?
I think members sometimes frequently forget that we actually took on new services and new staff as part of that function. So planning service transfer to us was roughly 40 plus staff. So I would contend, actually, if you look at the figures, that actually we're lower now than we were when transfer happened on the staff numbers. And we have taken on planning. We've also taken on staff from road service. And we've also taken other functions in terms of performance management, which wasn't a function of the council beforehand, community planning, which wasn't a function of the council beforehand. So I would contend that actually we're probably in a more efficient position than we were before before RPA came in. I will also use this opportunity, since I have got the floor, Chairman, to actually put the point is, I know the Northern Ireland Audit Office and Department for Community are intending doing a piece of work this year on looking benchmarking in terms of the impact of reform backed using the PwC report, which is totally out of date, which is based on unitary councils in the UK. And also, if councils start, I will strongly oppose, well, I won't be here to strongly oppose, but I will be leaving a legacy to strongly oppose anywhere where people try to compare where four councils went into one council, where two councils on the outskirts of Belfast within 5 miles of each other can easily come together when we're dealing with a large geographical area. And, you know, in terms of the number of other issues that have been transferred to ourselves. So you can't compare chickens and eggs and apples and oranges or whatever you want to compare. You know, there's got to be a proper analysis this year. And again, you know, councillors know themselves. We will never get to the place where we have all the staff in the one area. It just won't work. And what we can try to do is work in new ways of working. But that level of transformation takes time. And when you're trying to do that in the scenario, when you're trying to bring in, you know, new ways of working, you're dealing with trade unions in terms of seven different terms and conditions, all bringing that together, there's a major piece of work to be done in here. So it can't be done sort of on a level playing field. We're not the private sector, we are the public sector, and while we're the public sector, then things will happen slower. We just can't dictate what we want to do. So anyhow, I got the chance to put that on tape. Thank you, Chairman.
I hope that's well recorded. Councillor Burns.
The leaving comments. No, and I suppose it seems like a rerun, as Mark will tell you, from the meeting last night in the Canal Court. It's sort of a rerun that models in reality don't really fit. It might look well on paper when we're talking about certain models, and we're talking about the stroke services last night. And it's great on paper, and it looks well over in England and the whole lot, but when you take it to this district, it doesn't really marry. Like, so there are teething issues. So I totally agree with you, but I don't know if I'd say that in public. I thought we were in committee.
We wait.
I just wanted to make, it's the end of an issue, and I just wanted to note that from ourselves as members of the Audit Committee, that on this report, the necessary steps had been taken to ensure lessons are learned from the big screen. And I really do feel that that is the case. And I suppose there is an awful lot of negative press on this, and we get it through the audit report, and people are rightly on the back of the Council for that. But we had to take stock of where we stand, and most of us members sitting here weren't involved in the process, but had to deal with what came out of the process. And I think going through this committee, it was dealt with extremely effectively. I know personally that lessons are learned because, you know, the way we work now and the knowledge that we have for cases that's coming forward, and I'm talking totally hypothetically here, the cases coming forward, that it was the biggest learning call for us as well. So I know you can say, you know, there's no positives in it, but you put that case in front of anybody and redact all the information, and I mean, it's a quick way of learning what to do in the audit committee. So I know that is a positive that you really shouldn't have come in front of you, but this is the reality, and we will have cases and tricky cases in the future, but I think the lessons are learned and the necessary steps have been taken, and I hope that that is the end of it and we don't see another situation like this in the near future.
Thank you for those helpful comments. Any other questions? No. Tomás, thank you very much for that report. I appreciate it. It's very comprehensive and makes good reading. If members are happy, we can note that report. Okay, thank you. And the last item on the agenda, members, is just a circular. And just ask you to note that if members are happy, we can note that circular. Okay, thank you. I think that brings us to the end of my first audit committee. And thank you all for coming along and making it an enjoyable meeting. And I hope you get to enjoy the sunshine outside. And I'll see you at the next meeting. Thank you.